namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sa eva prakritim sukshmam. Daivim gunamayim vibhu. Yadrichaya eva opagatam. Abhyapadyata lilaya. Sa esha prakritim sukshmam. Daivim gunamayim vibhu. Yadrichaya eva opagatam. Abhyapadyata lilaya. Sa esha. That same Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prakritim. Material energy. Sukshmam. Subtle. Daivim.
Related to Vishnu.
Gunamayim.
Invested with the three modes of material nature.
Vibhu.
The greatest of the great.
Yadrichaya.
Of his own will.
Eva.
Quite.
Upagatam.
Obtained.
Abhyapadyata.
He accepted.
Lilaya.
As his pastime. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. As his pastime, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the greatest of the great, accepted the subtle material energy, which is invested with the three modes of material nature, and which is related with Vishnu. Purport. In this verse, the word gunamayim is very significant. Daivim means the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And gunamayim means invested with the three modes of material nature. When the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, this gunamayim energy acts as a manifestation of the energies of the three modes. It acts as a covering. The energy emanated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests in two ways: as an emanation from the Supreme Lord, and as a covering of the Lord's face. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that because the whole world is illusion by the three modes of material nature, the common conditioned soul, being covered by such energy, cannot see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example of a cloud is very nicely given. All of a sudden, there may appear a big cloud in the sky. This cloud is perceived in two ways. To the sun, the cloud is a creation of its energy. But to the ordinary common man in the conditioned state, it is a covering to the eyes. Because of the cloud, the sun cannot be seen. It is not that the sun is actually covered by the cloud. Only the vision of the ordinary being is covered. Similarly, although Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord, who is beyond Maya, the material energy covers the ordinary living entity. Those conditioned souls who are covered are individual living entities, and he from whose energy Maya is created is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In another place in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, 7th chapter, it is stated that Vyasadeva, by his spiritual vision, saw the Supreme Lord and the material energy standing behind him. This indicates that material energy cannot cover the Lord, just as darkness cannot cover the sun. Darkness can cover a jurisdiction which is very insignificant in comparison to that of the sun. Darkness can cover a small cave, but not the open sky. Similarly, the covering capacity of the material energy is limited and cannot act on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is therefore called Vibhu. As the appearance of a cloud is accepted by the sun, so the appearance of the material energy at a certain interval is accepted by the Lord. Although his material energy is utilized to create the material world, this does not mean that he is covered by that energy. Those who are covered by the material energy are called conditioned souls. The Lord accepts the material energy for his material pastimes in creation, maintenance, and dissolution. But the conditioned soul is covered. He cannot understand that beyond this material energy, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes. Just as a less intelligent person cannot understand that beyond the covering of the clouds, there is bright sunshine. Daivim gunamayim. This material nature has, well, it's sukshma, it's subtle. So, the study of nature, or what we call hard science, should not stop just at the investigation of what is visible, or even of what is measurable in our instruments. Science can only go so far. The biggest telescope can see what they think is the end of the universe, but it's a limited distance, and what they see there are just some smudges and blobs. They hear some noise, and they think it's the original sound of the Big Bang. Who knows what that noise is? The whirring of their telescope's motor or something in their own head. And they think they see the smallest atomic particles inside their electron telescope microscopes. But even carrying their perception to these extremes, small and big, there's something essential missing there. There is the subtle aspect of material nature that cannot be measured in any telescope or microscope or any kind of instrument. Subtle. Maya, in her original form, is so subtle that no one can perceive her, except for the Supreme Lord. Who's going to see her? Brahma? He's her creation. The other demigods? These beings, their vision is more gross, and they cannot perceive the original form of Prakriti. So my Prakriti is subtle. And then two other things are said about her. Daivi and Gunamayi, which may seem contradictory. This might be taken as a poetic device called Viroda Alankara. Apparent contradiction where there actually isn't any. But poetically, there's an appearance. There's intentionally set up by the poet a false appearance of contradiction, of contrariness, that Prakriti is simultaneously, at the same time, she's divine and she's material. Daiva is the conscious higher force beyond the mechanical. And Prakriti, Gunamayi, means the mechanical mechanism of inert matter. She's both. She's Daivi and she's Gunamayi. This is an apparent contradiction, but it's not a real contradiction. Because she is the person who presides over the impersonal, or the inert realm of matter. So it's her domain. That domain is non-different from her. But she herself is a living being, as we are, but not Jiva, she's a Shakti, to be technical. She's in the category of Krishna's consorts, the Shaktis. The Jivas are also Shakti, but the Shakti Tattva is infinite. Whereas, in the same way as the Bhagavan, the Bhagavat Shakti, the Personality of Godhead, and all the self-same forms, are all infinite. No limitation. All potencies are contained in the Supreme Lord. And he's infinite in size and space and time. He has no limit. And he contains everything in him. So his Swarupa is unlimited too. Those are three aspects of limitation: time, space, and what you are. I'm a jiva soul. I'm not God. So even apart from the fact that I am unlimited in time. I'm eternal, but I am limited in space as a jiva soul. I don't occupy all the space. When they said that jiva is sarvagata, that just means that wherever you go, you find jivas. They're all over the place. But no, there's no any jiva that occupies all the space. Only God can do that. Bhagavan. And his shakti. So the jiva is unbounded in time, but he is bounded in space, and he's bounded in his swarup. In other words, he's what he is, and he isn't everything else. I'm me, I'm not you. I'm not the other person over there, and I'm certainly not God. So I'm limited according to my swarupa. Now, contrasted to me, the personality of Godhead is unlimited in all three aspects. He's unlimited in time, he's also unlimited in space. He's smaller than the smallest, and he's bigger than the biggest. He's everywhere. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina. By my impersonal aspect, I pervade the entire created existence and the entire uncreated existence. And he's also unlimited, unbounded in his swarupa. He is everything. He is me. He is you. He is the next person. And he's also him, self. So he has all the swarups within his swarupa, his identity. Unbounded. So similar to him is his original shakti, his divine energy, his pleasure potency originally. Is also his consort, his female counterpart, is also unlimited in time and space, and she's relatively unlimited, at least compared to us. She's unlimited in her swarup. She's got unlimited expansions. But actually, she's not God. So there's that difference. But Prakriti is infinite, whereas the jivas are finite, infinitesimal. So therefore, there is a difference between that Daivi Prakriti and us. But we're all conscious living beings. Even the personality of Godhead is a nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. He's nitya, he's chetana, he's a living, eternal living being. God is, his shakti is, and we are. We're all. So she is one of those living beings, a special category of living being, who is the loving consort of the Supreme Lord, and who is infinite the way he is. And it's understood that every time God, Krishna, expands into one of his swarupas or one of his avatars, his energy, his consort, also expands in a corresponding form. Wherever Vishnu goes, Lakshmi comes along also in a suitable form. And Vishnu expands himself as Rudra. That's no longer Vishnu Tattva, but it is his expansion. She expands as Prakriti, the consort of Rudra. So she's a living being. She's an all-powerful living being, an infinite living being. At the same time, she's the controlling deity of the material energy. So we can say, in apparent contradiction, that she's Daivi and she's also Gunamayi. Divine, we say transcendental, that means something different than matter. And she's material, because she's the controlling deity of the material. Adyapadyata Lilaya. The material energy is accepted by the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada uses in his translation the word accepted. Although she may look horrible to us, Maya, and there are deities manifested in this world of Prakriti that are very gruesome. Some of the forms of Durga are very frightening. But she has her benign aspect also. She's actually a beloved devotee of the Supreme Lord, doing service for his pleasure. So So from his point of view, he's pleased by her service. She's helping. She's taking on the onerous responsibility of managing this material creation, of keeping it under keeping the living entities, conditioned souls, under control. It's a thankless task. She's responsible for keeping us in ignorance and for constantly punishing us with various kinds of suffering. It's not a pleasant task. A transcendental being doesn't like to harm or to restrict the freedom of other living beings. But sometimes it's your service to do that. Just like if you're a temple president. You've got to tell people to do things they don't want to do, and sometimes you have to punish them. Although our temple presidents are not monarchs according to the ancient Vedic system, so they cannot cut anybody's head off, but they can ask you to go to some other temple. You know, there is danda, but it's limited. So Maya, she has the horrible task of enslaving and punishing everybody. She does it because that's her service to Krishna. Krishna is pleased with her when she does it. And if she didn't do it, he wouldn't be pleased with her. Arjuna didn't want to kill on the Battle of Kurukshetra. And Krishna was displeased with him. Displeased with him for his nonviolence. And if Prakriti decided to become nonviolent, Krishna would be displeased with her. He's pleased with her when she gives misery to the conditioned souls who have to be punished. And actually, she's satisfied to do that service. And this is explained by Srila Jiva Goswami in the Tattvasandarbha, actually, that she wants to see that those who rebel against her Lord, that they're rectified. This should not be tolerated. That living entities reject the mercy of Krishna. So Maya wants to see that they experience an unpleasant consequence for their rebellion so that they can change and correct themselves. This is, this is the devotee doing her service. For Krishna, it's all lila. Abhyapadita lilaya. Krishna accepts Maya as another one of his lilas. Everything he does is lila. He doesn't have to go to work. He doesn't have to go to school. He just plays. We stopped playing when we were 5 years old, when they sent us to school. And after we got out of school, they sent us to work. You know, we don't remember what it's like to just play. But God never stopped playing. Even when it comes time to create the material world, he's playing. He's playing, even when it's time to send forth Maya to you know, heap suffering on all the living entities, for him it's a game, just like everything else is. He doesn't suffer, and he sees good in everything, that the living entities who are being punished are being benefited by that punishment. So he's happy and satisfied, even with that. But we cannot be so arrogant as to pretend that we're in the same position. How can we equate ourselves with God and think that we're also consorting with Maya as our lila, as our free play pastime? The Mayavadis are so arrogant and foolish that they actually make such a claim, that it's only their own lila that they're in Maya. Only the personality of Godhead can say that his consorting with Maya is his play. And he doesn't come. He cannot come under her influence, her control. Krishna comes under the control of his loving devotees, not under the control of demigods. Shri Krishna Akarshani Chasa is the sixth and most important special characteristic of pure devotional service. But it is understood that is in the stage of prema. Pure devotional service can attract and control Krishna when it's absolutely pure, when the devotee has prema, pure love, and is experiencing rasa, then that rasa, it's infectious. The devotee expresses rasa and Krishna experiences what the devotee is expressing. And that rasa intoxicates Krishna. He's attracted and controlled by it. But a devotee who doesn't have a taste for rasa, who's just a neophyte, cannot have the same power to control Krishna. Krishna may respond, but he's not under obligation. He's not forced to respond. Even he can reciprocate with neophytes, but that's just his noble obligingness. Just like a king may agree to see a beggar and give him some charity, but that's just his kindness. He has no business. He has no obligation to deal with beggars. Like that, and the neophyte devotee may get the special mercy of the Lord, but the Lord is not forced to do it. He doesn't feel compelled to do that. He just does it out of special kindness, to have anything to do with us. But the pure devotees, who have that power of rasa, they can bring Krishna under control. Those are the six qualities, the six special qualities of devotional service described by Rupa Goswami. Klesha gni shubada ta lohu krit sudurlabha sangananda visheshatma shi krishna akarshani chasa. There are three pairs of two qualities, and I think it's Jiva Goswami in his commentary identifies that two are for each of the three stages of bhakti practice. The vaidhi practice, then devotion in bhava and devotion in prema, three different stages. So in the neophyte stage of just practicing, when one is still conditioned and doesn't have firm attachment to Krishna but still has attachment to illusion, then still devotional service has two primary prominent functional qualities. Klesha gni and shubhada. It destroys your misery and makes your life auspicious. What do we mean by, well, miseries we know about. We don't have to belabor that topic. We all know what misery is. We all have experienced plenty of different kinds of miseries. But what do we mean by auspiciousness? Well, that means even ordinary auspiciousness. You know, your health improves, people like you and respect you, and you have money in your pocket. These are auspiciousnesses. That also is included, shubhada. We'll just speak of the higher auspiciousness of becoming attracted to Krishna. But even the material things, they accrue by strength of one's beginning to perform devotional service. That's under the category of shubhada, granting auspiciousness. Then bhava bhakti, when the seed of love begins to sprout, germinate in the heart. One hasn't fully experienced one's relationship with Krishna, but that seed of love, that love is beginning to shine in the heart. In that stage of bhava, the second two qualities become prominent. What you experience is so wonderful that liberation becomes a very undesirable, unimportant thing. It eclipses the importance of liberation. And that experience is very rare. Sudurlabha, hard to obtain. You're very lucky if you get it. And then for the last stage, you get these final two qualities. Sahadrananda visheshatma. It is filled with the most special, wonderful kind of ecstasy that is indescribable. Rupa Goswami doesn't, at that point, try to explain what it's like, just that it's very intense, sandra, and it's very special. Later on, of course, he writes the rest of the book to describe what the ecstasy is like. But in the beginning, for those who are just starting off, he cannot say too much. It's not, you know, they won't be able to understand very much in the beginning. So yes, it's very intense, and it's different than everything else you've ever experienced. Whatever you've experienced that might be pleasant, this is much better. And then, Sri Krishna Akarshani Chasa. And pure bhakti has the final, ultimate power, that it can even attract Krishna. To attract Krishna means to bring him under control. So pure devotional service can do that. That is the power of pure devotion. But Maya is ashamed to even stand in before Krishna. She's not standing in front of him trying to entice him. She's standing on his backside because she's embarrassed that she's got such an ugly service to do, punishing Krishna's creatures. So she doesn't manifest that all-attractive power, not toward the Supreme Lord. That's the difference between the material energy and the spiritual energy. The pure spiritual energy can even bring Krishna under control, whereas the material energy never brings Krishna under her influence. She's always bigger than she is. Daivi hi esha gunamayi, same words, daivi and gunamayi. Mama maya duratyaya. This maya keeps everybody entrapped. No one can get out of the control of maya. But it's my maya. So I'm totally, maya is totally under my control. And everybody else is totally under her control. Every conditioned soul. There is exception. Everybody else except those who are fully surrendered to me. They are released from the control of maya. Mamiva ye papajante mayam etam tarantite. So unfortunately we're not going to read the rest of the Kapiladeva's instructions in our classes. We're going to shift to the 10th canto. But I think we get the point that we conditioned souls should take shelter of Krishna and his divine energy and get free from his material energy. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes?
Yes, I noticed that in the last chapter that Prabhupada and his purports in particular has made a distinction, evident distinction, between the Lord's activities and the Lord's leelas.
Oh.
And I was assuming, on the basis of the fact that we have, that we also theologically make a distinction between, say, leela avatars and guna avatars and other forms of the Lord, that the leelas refers to the Lord's pastimes, whereas this kind of creation, destruction, maintenance, etc., is separate from his leela, but it would seem that, like that's not necessarily so.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe sometimes it's expressed like that. But it is described Srishti Leela. It's one of his Leelas. And the other Guna avatars are not God anyway. They're just his finite expansions.
From what you were saying, I was speculating that maybe Leelas means from his perspective. He doesn't have to make this kind of distinction, but we naturally do so.
And if we want to make a distinction, we can distinguish between his... his mukhya leelas and his gauna leelas, his purely spiritual leelas, pure play. You could say everybody involved with them are just playing, but what about the demons, you know, who are Krishna's enemies, even in his transcendental pastimes? For them, it's serious material business.
Then again, there's that purport in this very canto where Prabhupada says that the Lord's
after the class.
Pastimes of creation are in fact an extension of his Ras Leela.
Oh, where?
I don't remember the number. I think it's 27. There's a very, very interesting verse for it.
Okay.
I'll see if I can dig it up and read it to you.
But. Okay. I can say that everything is an extension of Krishna's intimate loving dealings.
Yeah. If the same Maya is at once Daivi and Guru,
yes,
then you have to be able to accommodate all these different apparent contradictions.
Okay, but it's not the point of view of our parampara, that because we're in Maya, therefore we're also part of the rasa dance.
Well, that's consistent with the idea that this is the statement that Srishti of Leela is Krishna's perspective, not necessarily ours.
Yes, but the devotees who are understanding the Leela from the Bhagavatam perspective, for them it's Leela too.
Mm-hmm.
Vicarious, they may just be reading about it. But they also get to taste the nectar. It's like Prabhupada was given the first printed copies of the fifth canto, and he saw the pictures of the soul suffering in hell. He was laughing at the pictures. He was very amused by them. Like, this is wonderful. You know? This is very nice, appropriate. Because he was as vicarious.
There's also in these Vidhi Pratiran and Vrindavan dramas. So I read one book, somebody was asking about what is the Rasa expressed here? And the Rasdari, the person who was in charge of the Rasa, he answered, in terms of the Rasa that Krishna experiences, it's not necessarily the Rasa that we experience. So it's important to keep that in mind, that things judged from Krishna's perspective are usually, but not necessarily, different than things judged from our perspective, until we become one in spirit with Krishna.
Yeah. It's not like, a rasa in which Krishna and the devotee are sharing the same rasa. One of them is the vishaya, the other is the ashraya. Mm-hmm. You can't say that in the creation. Krishna's the vishaya of Krishna rasa, and we are the ashrayas who are experiencing the loving ecstasy of being in Maya. It doesn't work like that. We're not sharing the same rasa in this case. We've been disqualified from the rasa by being here in the first place. Okay. Something else? Very good. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.